This is the Winchester Talking newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 26th of August, 2016. Welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking newspaper. The extracts we have for you this week have been edited by Liz and Gordon Legg. We'll begin as usual with the regular notice, and the first one is to say that if you do know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01 962 870 370. And just to remind you that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And one more reminder for those of you with computers or tablets. As well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. That's www.winchestertalkingnews.com, all lowercase, no spaces. You just need to go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, the most recent first on the list. And so on to this week's edition of the Chronicle. The readers today are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
And Jerry Tuff.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter this week, Ros Lydiard. So on with the news and what's in the headlines on the Chronicle this week. Well, first we'll have bid for homes rejected again. You're not having me, taunts driver. Murderer's family in bid to clear his name. Claire, please give us the first headline story.
Bid for homes rejected again. A resubmitted application for a controversial housing scheme on a green gap north of Winchester has been refused by planners. The Welsh family applied to build up to 45 homes and open space on their land between Littleton and Hairstock. The application on Hairstock Road also included the conversion of a barn, which would become a scout hut, and community centre. Of the 45 buildings, 40% were earmarked for affordable housing, with an additional 8 self-built units. In May last year, the previous application was unanimously rejected by Winchester City Council, amid fears it would destroy the green gap between Littleton and Hairstock. The resubmission sought to address these issues, including excluding an area of development and the addition of 0.76 hectares of public open space. However, planning committee members last Thursday again rebuffed the scheme. Reasons for refusal noted the application undermines the local plan part 2 process. Recommended by the planning officer for refusal, the document said the proposal would be so significant that to grant planning application would undermine the local plan part 2 process by conflicting with the emerging plan and predetermining decision about the scale, location or phasing of the new development. LPP2 was recently examined in July in a series of meetings chaired by Nigel Green. The plan is due to be published later this year. The application received 43 letters of objection, with a contrasting 6 in support. One objector was Littleton and Hairstock Parish Council. In a letter, it said, "This character of rural and arable land should be retained where possible, and the village itself and views of its buildings should not normally be permitted to intrude the countryside. Whilst we applaud the provision of a public open space to be included in this proposal, together with a barn for community use, we are concerned that there will be insufficient funds available within this charity organisation for the proper care and maintenance of these facilities. Being an open space, there would be a likelihood of fly tipping and rubbish disposal or unwanted travellers inhabiting the site. We are concerned that all of this would be detrimental to the area within the parish. However, supporters say the area is in need of affordable housing. Lucy Dix of Hillside Road, Winchester, said, "This is a great use of otherwise wasted land. It has no benefit to anyone else apart from the owners. We should embrace this application as it has many merits." Another supporter, Kenneth Day of Doman Road, Winchester, added, "If not granted, it is likely the immediate area to the north of Harestock Road become more unsightly than it is now. Furthermore, the traffic and other environmental problems which will arise from this small enclave cited by the objectors are overstated. It is not yet known if another appeal will be lodged."
And let's have your item, Richard, about that driver.
"Yes, you're not having me," taunts driver. A cocaine-fuelled motorist drove at speeds of up to 50 miles an hour through Winchester city centre in a bid to evade arrest. Jamie Batting drove over a police officer's foot and sped through narrow city streets, including part of the pedestrianised high street, as he tried to avoid capture. Now, the 37-year-old of Providence Park, Southampton, has been jailed for 18 months and is banned from driving for 3 years. Winchester Crown Court heard how Batting pleaded guilty to dangerous driving, assault with intent to resist arrest by police, and driving with excess alcohol and driving with excess drugs. He was spotted by police driving his partner's Land Rover on North Walls at double the 20-mile-an-hour speed limit, the court was told. He was pulled over and breathalysed by PC Warren Macklin in Park Avenue and arrested. As the officer was carrying out the arrest, he was distracted by a woman who was suffering an epileptic fit. As he tried to help her, Batting saw his opportunity to escape. The court heard how Batting turned his car around and told the officer, "You're not having me." PC Macklin tried to stop him by trying to grab the keys as Batting was driving away. Prosecuting, Dawn Hyland said Batting steered into PC Macklin to shake him off and drove over his foot before speeding down North Walls. The court showed footage of Batting driving at high speeds. The vehicle was seen speeding past King Alfred's statue before swerving and screeching as Batting drove up the high street. He then turned into Market Street, the square, and went the wrong way down Great Minster Street. Witnesses Jimmy and Billy Hobbs, who were walking along the high street, later helped police to find the vehicle after seeing it speed down the high street. They described him as driving like a nutter at an estimated 50 miles an hour and said he was struggling to keep control of the vehicle. Jimmy Hobbs said in a statement, "The car accelerated towards us and the driver appeared to struggle to keep his car in a straight line and he swerved from side to side. I would guess he was doing about 50 miles an hour, and there were a number of people sat on the high street at the time." He added that he and his brother feared the car would hit them. They followed the car to its eventual stop and saw it turn into the square, and they then followed it to its eventual stop outside the Old Vine Pub in Great Minster Street, thanks to a trail of diesel. After finding the car, they alerted a nearby police officer. The court heard that the vehicle had hit a wall before it came to a stop. Batting was later found hiding in an alleyway. He was 3 times the limit for driving under the influence of cocaine and was 30 times over the limit for another psychoactive drug and was also marginally over the drink driving limit. In a victim statement, PC Macklin said, "I feel the actions of the driver of the vehicle were reckless and dangerous." The statement added, if he'd not been for his reinforced boots, he would have suffered a serious foot injury. In mitigation for batting, Claire Wiggett told the court he suffers from anxiety and needs rehabilitation for drug problems. She said he was selected for Sandhurst Military Academy, but instead chose to play rugby for Leicester Tigers, where a shoulder injury curtailed his career. Batting then worked in private security in war-torn countries, which worsened his anxiety when he returned. Sentencing, Assistant Judge Advocate General Hill also ordered he pay £500 compensation to PC Macklin.
And, Jerry, the third headline item, please.
Murderer's family in bid to clear his name. The family of a murdered pensioner are facing fresh heartache after the family of the man convicted of killing her offered a £25,000 reward for information they say could clear his name. Matthew Hamlin was jailed for life last year after being found guilty of the brutal killing of Georgina Edmonds. The 77-year-old was battered to death in her own home after being tortured for her PIN number. 4 years ago, Hamlin was cleared of murdering Mrs. Edmonds at her riverside cottage at Branbridge near Eastleigh in 2008. But new DNA evidence came to light, and he was rearrested in 2014 following a relaxation of the double jeopardy law, which had previously prevented anyone being tried for the same crime twice. Earlier this year, Hamlin was convicted of murdering Mrs. Edmonds, who was stabbed 37 times before being bludgeoned with a rolling pin. The 36-year-old electrician was told he would spend at least 30 years behind bars. But Hamlin's supporters, who describe him as a hard-working family man, are convinced he's innocent and have launched a campaign to clear his name. They are hoping their offer of a huge cash reward for new information will lead to his conviction being quashed. A member of his campaign team said, "In addition to securing Matthew's release, we want to achieve real justice for those closest to the late Mrs. Edmonds. Her murder was brutal. It benefits no one that an innocent man serves a life sentence for a crime he did not commit." Hundreds of posters publicising the reward will be distributed across Hampshire in the hope that a previously unknown witness will come forward with information which could prove that Hamlin had nothing to do with Mrs. Edmonds' death. During the second trial, jurors were shown CCTV footage of an unidentifiable man, said by the prosecution to be Hamlin, trying to obtain £200 from a cash machine using the murder victim's debit card. But one of Hamlin's ex-colleagues, David Moore, of Carlton Electrical Services, watched the footage and told the court it wasn't Matthew. The campaign team spokesman said, "Matthew's height, build and shoe size simply don't match those of the person dubbed ATM Man or Yellow Coat Man. Matthew is 5'9", slim, and takes a size 10 shoe. ATM Man appears to be about 6'2", well-built, with larger feet." The spokesman confirmed that Hamlin lived near the cash machine at the time, but added, "Would the villa use an ATM in the vicinity of their own home?" Jurors at the second trial heard that following his acquittal 8 years ago, police found new DNA evidence linking him to Mrs. Edmonds' murder. A sample obtained from the victim's blouse was 26 million times more likely to have come from Hamlin than someone else, the court was told. But his family are pointing to flaws in the system, including cases of DNA being transferred from one person to another via a third party. The spokesman said, "Misinterpretation, human error, contamination, and simple laboratory accidents are not as rare as people think. This is especially the case when the evidence is based on touch DNA, so named because it requires only very small samples, such as skin cells, to be left on an object after it's been handled. When we handle a banknote, our DNA is transferred to the note, and we pick up some of the DNA of previous users of the note. This can then be transferred to other objects we touch. A number of convictions in this country and abroad have been overturned because the DNA evidence relied upon was not sound. Many innocent people have spent years incarcerated for crimes they did not commit, leaving the real perpetrators at large. Matthew is a hard-working family man, and the picture painted by the prosecution does not ring true with those closest to him.
Thank you, Jerry. And we'll give you the death notices for this week, please, and I'll start with Clinch, Francis James Clinch, peacefully on the 15th of August, aged 89.
Groves, Margaret Amy Bubbles Groves, on 18th August, age 81 years.
Holmes, Olive Mary Holmes, passed away peacefully in Abbeygate Nursing Home, on the 17th of August, aged 86.
Jones, Marion Jones, passed away peacefully on the 12th of August, aged 95 years.
King, Alfred George, Alf King, peacefully at Devonshire House Nursing Home, aged 89.
Kingshot, Audrey Joy Kingshot, passed away peacefully on 19th August, aged 87 years.
Knight, Florence Bertha Flurry Knight, in her 99th year, on the 18th of August, passed peacefully.
Richardson, Muriel Richardson, passed away at home on 14th of August, aged 73 years.
Rogers, Jim Rogers, on the 19th of August, aged 74.
Rumble, Hilda Rumble, passed away at Flowerdown Nursing Home on 16th August, aged 93.
Thank you, everyone. And it's Christian Comment now, and Claire's going to read us a contribution by Rosemary Baker. Thanks, Claire.
She has headed this, "We are pilgrims on the same journey." The Olympics are over for another 4 years, the Paralympics still to come. St. Paul writes about running the race that lies before us. The Old Testament suggests God himself may have a penchant for wrestling. September lies before us with the beginning of a new academic and church year. We have run the race and finished the course of the departing year. Don't we get a medal or something for keeping the faith? The answer seems to be not yet, because even though we feel that we have proven ourselves, we hear the crack of the starter's pistol, and without respite or even a swig of energy drink, we are entered in the race of the new year in which we must prove ourselves all over again. As we scramble to catch up with the other runners, did someone tip them off about it and not tell us? We find that we have not really escaped the last year yet. It's hard to believe those who preach about the imminence of the end time and the last days, when we seem to live between beginnings that never end and endings that turn into new beginnings. That fact, of course, is that we are pilgrims. The defining character of the human species, mythology scholar Donald Leeming writes, is the pilgrimage aspect, because we are the only species concerned with the idea of the journey of life. Journey is our dominant human metaphor. From the epic poem of Gilgamesh, through Homer, to John Bunyan, down to Robert Frost's Road Not Taken, and Jack Kerouac's On the Road in Our Own Time, we find our constant journey defined and celebrated. In larger or smaller ways, we humans are always on the move. Noah could have built a cruise ship as readily as an ark. We are pilgrims on the same journey over the consuming torrent of passing time, finding our way by the light of the eternal that glints in this very stream of passing time. "I am the Alpha and the Omega" is one of God's best lines in the Bible. "I am the beginning and the end." That gives the measure of the profound mystery that makes our workaday lives ever transparent to transcendence. I am leaving my post as a consultant psychiatrist at the beginning of September, begun 31 years ago to the day, to begin my retirement proper. We are every day involved in the pilgrimage of our ever-repeated journey between endings and beginnings, in the acts of creation that constitute the wonder of life, and that are powered by the microchips of the eternal. We won't all get medals, but we can make a difference. And that was written by Rosemary A. Baker.
Thank you. And on to letters to the editor, of which we have 12 today to read to you. And of course, the Boomtown Festival in the Matterley Bowl has caused quite a stir. Richard, will you start us off with the first letter, please?
Yes. From Miranda Pinch, who says, many loved the event. I was horrified by your misleading and biased front page story of August the 18th. You said, what should have been a fun-filled event instead saw... What about the fact that many people, including myself and thousands of young people, thoroughly enjoyed the festival without recourse to drugs and with cars intact? Not only have you over-sensationalised the problems, but at time of writing, you did not know what the cause of death of the teenager was and were therefore making a huge assumption that somehow the Boomtown organisers were at fault. It's true that there needs to be a review of the parking arrangements and that the tinder dry stubble as a fire hazard should have been foreseen. It's also true that the traffic gridlock at the close of the festival was unacceptable, and new traffic management proposals are needed to address this issue. However, everyone I encountered at the festival, both during and since, looked well, friendly and happy. And both myself and my friend, both in our 60s, felt totally safe and relaxed. The teenager who died was found dead in her tent, and at time of writing this letter, we still do not know the cause of death, and do not know if it was alcohol or drug-related. Even prisoners cannot avoid the presence of drugs entirely, and individuals must take some responsibility for their own actions and behaviour. Had your story started with the words, despite the problems, many enjoyed themselves safely, or words to that effect, I would not be complaining like this. The issues that marred the weekend certainly did not outweigh the positives for very many people. Round a pinch, Downgate, Oldsford.
And a contrary opinion comes from Keith Webb. This year, Boomtown has once again shown its ability to disrupt our lives, as traffic leaving the event caused total gridlock. As did many of those I know who were in their cars on Monday afternoon, I got totally stuck as traffic ground to a standstill. I spent over an hour doing a journey that normally takes less than 5 minutes. It was a hot day, and pollution around Winchester must have been stratospheric. We now hear that the organisers, purely driven by profit, want to increase the numbers next year by another 10,000 to 60,000. The City Council must say no to this, and if it is to be held at all, insist on numbers being reduced to, say, 30,000. Quite apart from the disruption over the past few years, four young people attending have died, apparently from drug overdoses. This will have a huge impact on their families' lives. Such was the poor organisation this year that scores of parked cars were destroyed by fire, an accident waiting to happen in a summer as dry as this. The council should charge a huge licence fee if Boomtown is to be repeated to compensate for the effect on the local economy. This fee should be set at £5 at least per person attending, and if a similar situation develops next year, this could be increased to £10 per head. This would enable proper controls to be put in place, such as searching vehicles for drugs, using sniffer dogs as they can be so effective, and making very clear in advance that this will be done. With hefty fines or prison sentences for those who deal in drugs, dealers would probably stay away, and those who come to enjoy the music without being stoned would enjoy the experience much more. Keith Webb, Quarry Road, Winchester.
And another on Boomtown. This one is headed Revoke License. Your front page on Boomtown, August the 18th, states that County Councillor for Itchen Valley, Jackie Porter, said she believed every step is taken by organisers to keep revellers safe, and that I have been chairing the committee for a couple of years that looks after the safety of the public and of the local area. However, she had failed to ensure that the single traffic lane with passing places only and unsuitable for large HGVs, i.e. Chapel Lane, just off the Percy Hobbs roundabout, would be closed to traffic. She ought to know that the potholed lane would not take festival traffic without causing chaos with traffic or accessing their properties in the lane, seeing she lives less than 2 miles from the lane and hence has ample local knowledge. Secondly, she failed to ensure that the Pop Festival, an unnatural use of prime Hampshire farming land, will not interrupt with farming in full swing. The roads and lanes being gridlocked, so homes could not be accessed and the harvest collected could not reach the grain stores. Lastly, any farmer will know that tinder dried grass in a field is highly combustible, and Mrs. Porter should acquaint herself with that fact. The Matterley site is wholly unsuitable for large numbers and should not be held before the end of August for the reasons above, and its license for unnatural use of the countryside should therefore be revoked. Mrs. G. Hague Haddo, Chapel Lane, Easton.
And Andrew Beadle also has concerns, saying the roads cannot cope with Boomtown. Sir, I'm wondering how much bigger Winchester City Council is going to allow Boomtown Fair to become. This year, permission was given for an expansion in numbers to 60,000. Whilst additional car parking capacity was approved, the traffic gridlock around Winchester on the Monday afterwards was terrible. Not only were the main roads gridlocked, but the chaos extended to the very narrow lanes as drivers tried to find alternative routes. 2 months ago, you quoted the festival host as saying that the event could get much bigger and that he didn't see a limit. The site itself may be capable of coping with more people, but the roads certainly are not. I also question how much benefit the event brings to Winchester itself. The traffic at Christmas time may be bad, but at least it brings trade into the city. Why can the City Council not require the organisers to apply much higher car parking charges so as to encourage more to come by public transport? You could possibly even insist on a share of the revenue raised. Now is the time when the Council should start to think seriously about the possible options for the future before it's rushed into a decision again next year. Let us hope it does not waste the opportunity. Andrew Beadle, Marsdown Place, Winchester.
Well, this letter isn't about Boomtown, but it is about traffic. And it comes from Christopher Gillam, who writes on behalf of Winchester Friends of the Earth. At current levels of pollution in Winchester, there is a calculable minimum cost in ill health. Just for those residents within the Central Air Quality Monitoring Area and for soot pollution alone, government formulae say that 6 people die each year and 68 years of life are lost. This does not count the mortality for the major pollutant, NO2, for which no simple formula exists, nor does it count the health costs to shoppers and workers in the city centre. Pollution is caused by traffic, which increases with parking provision. Pollution increases disproportionately as the centre reaches gridlock, which it is increasingly doing. So any decision to increase parking is a decision to increase the mortality and health damage to the population. Nevertheless, the Planning Committee, both Conservative and Lib Dem, unanimously decided that the health damage was a price worth paying for whatever benefit it considered the city derived from the extra traffic. Besides deciding to poison us more, it also decided that the Council's own planning policy could be discarded in doing so. Cabinet Councillor James Burns has clearly indicated that the outcome of the current car parking consultation is already determined by making a preemptive case for this car park rebuild. He avoided mention of the council's own local plan, which this scheme is ignoring, and his case was also defective in point of fact and logic. Councillor Burns repeated the assertion that it is received wisdom that car park occupancy of 85% signifies a need to provide more capacity. The exact reverse of normal parking management practice. The Institution of Highways and Transportation's Parking Strategies and Management says, set charges and controls at a level that will keep peak demand at no more than about 85% capacity. He also repeats the claim that because nearly full car parks generate circulating traffic and more pollution, more car parking should be provided, seemingly unable to comprehend that increased capacity leads to the same problem with greater overall traffic and pollution. Repeating absurdity ab nauseam does not make it credible. Christopher Gillam for Winchester Friends of the Earth, Upper High Street, Winchester.
This letter is from Robert Brown of the Winchester Bookshop. It must be the silly season. Your correspondent Catherine Turnus's idea that the lack of large offices in central Winchester, letters August the 4th, may be the beginning of what may be the economic decline of the city seems little more than fanciful. I obviously fall into Miss Turnus's category of those of a very limited view that Winchester will survive no matter what. As Winchester has come this far, only 1,000 years or so, without huge offices, and has collected on the way, in no particular order, a wonderful and historic cathedral, an outstanding and historic public school for boys, an outstanding sixth form college, excellent other schools, a county council headquarters, a city centre awash with some of the best known restaurant names and with increasing footfall, a thriving tourist industry, excellent communication links, and some of the most expensive housing in the south of England. My crystal ball doesn't give me any indications of economic collapse any time soon. If the new housing on Barton Farm fails to sell, and our landlord tells me he's reducing our rent, then perhaps I might believe it. In the meantime, pull the other one. Robert Brown, The Winchester Bookshop, St George's Street, Winchester.
And more concerns about pollution in a letter headed Appalled at Move. I am utterly appalled that Winchester City Council's planning committee has rubber-stamped the plans to revive the Friars Gate car park. This new multi-story will obviously lead to even more cars being attracted to Winchester city centre and travelling around the one-way system. There were many good reasons that this application and all others like it should be rejected. Firstly, air pollution from traffic in our city centre is already at illegal levels and has a detrimental effect on the health of residents, workers and visitors. An increase in vehicles will exacerbate congestion and pollution, increasing the incidence of many medical problems, asthma, cardiac problems, dementia, and contribute to the rate of premature death from pollution in Winchester. Secondly, towns with low levels of car use are known to outperform those with high levels of car use. Pollution and congestion are never good for business. Thirdly, approving the application breaks the council's own planning policy, which states that the development of additional public car parks in Winchester will not be permitted. Fourthly, it preempts the car parking strategy, which Winchester City Council is currently reviewing. We desperately need real action to reduce traffic congestion and pollution in our city. The last thing we need is another car park. We are quite literally being poisoned by the council's planning decision. in view of the illegality of the city's air pollution and the growing awareness and concern among residents of the problem, it is simply outrageous that this application has been approved. It demonstrates an alarming disregard for the population's health and well-being. Hazel Agombar, Egbert Road, Hyde, Winchester.
This letter is from Nicholas Craig Harvey. It is time for the residents of Winchester to say what we want in our city. There is a process used successfully in other cities in similar situations that gives everyone a chance to participate. The process is run by someone with relevant professional qualifications, without ties to the city, and supported by an equally neutral group of organisers. The aim is to give the City Council guidelines on what we want in Winchester and where we want it, including affordable and other housing, infrastructure, employment, health, retail, culture, entertainment, etc. It takes time to be carefully planned and organised, but it will save a lot of time and money in the future. There will be a mixture of events over 2 or 3 days, including open forums, focus groups, written contributions, presentations, drop-in meetings and questionnaires. These are brought together into an open report with a summary of the recommendations. Anyone and any organisation interested in the future of Winchester can take part, including individuals, businesses, voluntary organisations, schools and the university. The council and the executive are represented, but they are on neutral ground and where they can make their views heard without reference to divisive decisions on specific developments. A lot of our money and the council's time have been spent on getting nowhere on major projects. The council does not reply to my detailed proposals, probably because they do not want to move away from the formal consultation and political procedures that they control. This is too important for our future to let it end in stalemate or getting something because it is better than nothing. I believe that we can rely on the sense and sensitivities of the residents. We should be able to say what we want in our city. Nicholas Craig Harvey, Woodman Lane, Sparsholt.
This letter is headed, "It's a real farce." I must agree with Paul Bulkley. What is Winchester City Council looking for when it comes to architecture and redevelopment? What does good enough for Winchester mean? Chronicle, August the 4th. The vital Silver Hill redevelopment has already taken 20 years and they still have not found the Holy Grail, though Councillor Gottlieb apparently knows it, but it's going to take him well into 2017 before he reveals his ideal. Then what will happen? On past form, I strongly believe that he will be unable to satisfy all the pressure groups. The council will not make a decision, the area will become even more derelict, and the high street will decline, whilst the city will carry on losing revenue from the area. The high street has difficulties as it is with poor access, insufficient parking and the internet, without the council's indecision putting the knife in as well. Take away the tourist and who's left? The locals are increasingly going elsewhere to shop. The only things there for me are the bank, a coffee and a haircut. I now see the station approach development submissions were not good enough. Well, only 2 of the 5 originally interested took the gamble with their designs. Perhaps the others realised their proposals would not reach the high standards required, whatever they are. Not all the city centre can be a museum. Some of it has to be modern, job-creating and vibrant, and where better than the station approach area? What do they want? If you set the bar too high, no one tries. The next chapter of the farce will be the old cattle market and the Winchester Club site. It's a similar area, so what will happen next? Left to the pressure groups, the M3 would not exist and Barton Farm would not be started. But on the positive side, we will probably have a leisure centre no one can get to. Also, it was very ethical for the South Downs National Park boundary to strangle the city centre, but did anybody think of the consequences? Roger Mallin, Goring Field, Tegdown, Winchester.
The question is asked by the Chronicle's roving reporter is, should there be more late-night transport in Hampshire? That relates to the introduction of 24-hour tube in London. And Claire has the comments of four people who were asked the question.
The first one is Colin Rees, who's 59, a taxi driver, who runs Colin's Cabs from King's Avenue in Stanmore, Winchester. He said, if there are no trains, then there is no trade up at the railway station at night. I would welcome things like trains running all night every time. Kev Smith, 43, a big issue seller from Winchester, said, do we really need it? Are we a big enough city to have it? Would it get used? I think it depends on where you live. Talia Dean, who's 18, who works for Winchester Cathedral Refectory from Chilbolton Avenue, Winchester, said, I think it would be good to have more of the buses, especially running later on. It would offer more variety of transport. And the last one, Owen Norgate, who's 32, of Staple Gardens, Winchester, said, it would be a good idea, especially if people are commuting at night.
Thank you very much, Claire. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject that you'd like to air in Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or you can email them, news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, all lowercase, no spaces. news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could write to them. That would be to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And the next item is editorial comment. Editorial comment this week focuses on the Friars Gate car park and is the decision a right one? On balance, the correct decision has been made by the planning committee to partially reopen the Friars Gate multi-storey car park. Environmental campaigners, who tend to live 5 minutes' walk from the Buttercross, say an opportunity is being wasted to reduce parking and so cut air pollution. This is of interest to us, that is the Hampshire Chronicle, at 5 Upper Brook Street, where air quality is at its worst. Adequate parking is crucial in the real world, and it is no answer to simply reduce the number of spaces. The closure of Chesil Street Open Air and the imminent end of the one in Upper Brook Street has tipped things too far. The environmentalists cite other cities where parking has been reduced, but every place is unique, and what works in York will not necessarily work here. One of our unique complicating features is the lack of a northern ring road, so all traffic from Andover Road, Worthy Lane and Eastern Lane funnels down into the city centre's one-way system. Where the Chronicle would agree with many people is that parking is a key issue in the unpopularity of Silver Hill and Station Approach, with the amount of parking the key reason the schemes are so big. One answer at Silver Hill would be to move the parking across the road to create a new multi-storey on Middlebrook Street and so reduce the height of the development. Just a thought. And we're moving on now to first person, and Khalid Aziz is the contributor, and Richard's going to read his item, please.
I'm a keen adherent of Oscar Wilde's dictum. When I feel the need to exercise, I lie down until it passes. So the prospect of the Olympics held no real excitement for me. But like I suspect many fellow couch potatoes, it sucks you in. Granted, the unfolding medal tally shoving Team GB up the table to second position helped. We can all bask in reflected national pride. It felt like a post-Brexit bounce, if not a shot in the arm, for Brits battered by a tough economy and a divisive referendum. As I write, I've just witnessed our women's hockey team, sturdy girls all, win gold against world champions Holland, even sturdier and Amazonian to boot. Mind you, it came down to a penalty shootout when our goalie Maddie Hinch really came into her own. I cannot be the only one, with my hockey knowledge brain frozen at the age of 12 on an equally frozen school hockey pitch, who would have named Miss Hinch Woman of the Match. But there are no such awards, as that would be against the Olympian spirit. Indeed, it was charming to watch how sporting the hockey women were to each other, the two captains embracing and wishing each other good luck before the shootout. Imagine that on a professional football field. Of course, the Olympian spirit hasn't been universal. Not enough Brazilians turned up to fill even the places left after Olympic officials arrogated to themselves the best seats in the house, only to leave them empty. The same thing appeared to happen at the London Olympics, explained away at the time by the British organisers with some tosh about having to abide by the rules of the IOC, the old out-of-our-hands excuse. This needs to be sorted. Also needing sorting are the cases of alleged ticket tawdry by officials. The 72-year-old Irish official will no doubt have a perfectly plausible explanation for the 6,000 tickets mysteriously found in his possession. It's hard to avoid the thought that, reputationally, the IOC might be only a few scandals away from the execrable FIFA. Scandalous, too, is the cynical way in which money has been switched away from the Paralympics in order to keep up the main event. Up to 10 countries might not be represented because there's no cash to pay the airfares. Sadly, the Cariocas seem even less attracted to the Paras than they are to the main games. Those who attended the London Paralympics freely admitted to having their eyes opened about disability. At Enham Trust, the charity I chair, that afterglow is still felt. It's broken down many barriers too. This week, Ed Lee and his friend Sam McDonald-Smith are setting off to cycle from Vancouver to Washington, D.C. for our charity. Meanwhile, Ed's sister Izzy, who has cerebral palsy and lives at Enham, will be taking part by cycling 30 kilometres on a stationary bike. Do keep track of their progress and sponsor them if you can. Against such personal endeavours, is it too much to ask those who run the Olympics to ensure the Paralympics aren't shunted into a siding? It's all about perseverance, and no Olympian has more of that than Nick Skelton, who is now surely an icon for those of us who as shadows lengthen, see their footsteps advancing towards the grave. Having broken his neck and not unreasonably retired 16 years ago, he put himself back in the saddle to ride a series of perfect show jumping rounds. As he stood on the winner's podium, national anthem playing, union flag rising and lower lip trembling, looking at it at 58, all the world like a Hampshire farmer who just stepped off his combine harvester, I wasn't surely the only one moved by his modest sense of grit and achievement. What's more, when asked about appearing at Tokyo, his first thought was for his horse, Big Star. Well, he'll be 17 then, and perhaps getting on a bit. Nick will be 62. What was really touching was to see the way in which his fellow medalists seemed genuinely pleased as they warmly congratulated him. The Olympian spirit lives on. Let's not let it die.
And so say all of us. The next item is the Belgarum. Alternative views of the news, and we've got two for you this week. One of them is going to be read by Claire, and it's about the Ropley pram race, and then Richard will give us a piece about Phil Yates, who's a retired archivist to the Theatre Royal. He's a Winchester historian and a regular contributor to the Letters column. So Claire, would you start us off, please?
Certainly. This is headed Doubt Cast on Pram Race. A filmmaker, originally from Ropley, has made the first documentary about the annual village pram race. Andrew F. Day, himself a three times winner, of the Best Decorated Pram competition began filming in 2003. But it wasn't until 2014, after he had set up his own film production company, Yellow Balloon Films, that the long-held ambition to document the origins of the races could be realised. His research questions the race origins. Ropley legend tells how a bet was made in 1965 between four men, Dick Newman, Ted Fordred, Les and Bob Etherington, at the Anchor Pub, that they wouldn't be able to make it all the way round the village whilst pushing each other in a pram, stopping at each public house, then three, to down a pint of ale. Since then, the race has been run non-stop for 51 years. As it turns out, neither the story or date is true, asserts Mr. Day. Using interviews with original racers and the widow of Dick Newman, the film reveals the true story of how the race came into being. The film crew were also granted exclusive access to the Newts, villagers who create surreal prams, including a Viking ship and minis from the Italian job.
Hill hike was worth it for Phil, 90. Local historian Phil Yates decided it was about time to climb St. Catherine's Hill again, something he hasn't done in a long time. So, in his 90th year, he thought he would have a go with fellow historian and lifelong Wintonian Rod Youngman, who Phil says is a mere 76. Last Thursday, on a hot August morning, they set off climbing the hill from the Garnier Road entrance. Mr. Yates of Tower Street told Belgarm that it took the pair some time to reach the top as the steps were uneven. From there they had a marvellous view of the city stretching from Hockley Viaduct across to Hyde and to the south, even catching a glimpse of the Isle of Wight. They then walked through the famous clump of trees and walked through the mizmaz, said to have been carved by a Winchester College boy with his penknife many years ago. The pair then traversed down the steps on the other side of the hill, Jacob's Ladder, counting the steps as they went. 331, apparently. However, that was enough excitement for one day, and they headed to the Bell Inn for a much-deserved pint and lunch. Phil said, "I wouldn't have missed this trip for the world, and having Rod with me was great, as I am partially sighted. As kids, we used to climb the hill with our bikes and skid down the other side."
And historical items now, with the usual mini news clip starting with 25 years ago from Claire.
25 years ago, Friday, August the 23rd, 1991. Parking petition. Campaigners from Full Flood are petitioning Winchester City Council to ensure a proposal for a residence-only scheme is renewed. The parking restriction is intended to cover two Winchester roads, Elm Road and Fairfield Road, but the campaigners argue the scheme will have a detrimental effect on the surrounding streets. They say the cars of non-residents currently parked in the two roads will have to go elsewhere, placing considerable pressure on nearby streets, none of which have been consulted about the change. And the second section is headed Alcohol Survey. Winchester residents are to be asked if they support the introduction of a proposed bylaw banning alcohol drinking from certain areas in the city centre. City councillors have decided to seek public opinion through the local press as to whether the model bylaw for prohibiting the consumption of intoxicating liquor in designated places should be introduced. On July the 1st, the council started a six-month survey to establish the extent, location, and scale of public drinking problems and the unwelcome effects associated with it.
And from 50 years ago, Saturday, August the 27th, 1966. Oslebury robbery. Large numbers of police with tracker dogs searched an area near Beauworth on Thursday afternoon following a report that a van had been stolen after its two occupants had been held up at gunpoint in Oslebury. Police converged on a narrow country lane leading from the main Widgester to Petersfield Road to the Fox and Hounds crossroads at Beauworth, where they found a blue Morris van, abandoned, with two of its wheels up on the grass verge. Nearby woods and cornfields were combed by policemen on foot with tracker dogs, and patrol cars checked traffic. But shortly after 6:40 p.m, DS Cyril Holdaway said the search had been called off. He added there would be little possibility of any charge being made. And self-built houses. Saturday was a red-letter day for the members of Sandy Lane Housing Association, Fair Oak, where the Mayor and Mayoress of Eastleigh and Mr. David Price, MP, visited the site at Grangewood Gardens to hand over the keys of the first two houses to be completed in a unique self-building scheme. The members started building their own houses on the site, which is just within the borough of Eastleigh, in January last, and have worked at weekends and holidays throughout the winter, often in snow, rain and frost.
100 years ago, August the 26th, 1916. Battleship torpedoed. The Secretary of the Admiralty made the following announcement. Submarine E-23, which is returned today from the North Sea, reports that on the morning of Saturday last, the 19th, she made a successful torpedo attack upon a German battleship of the Nassau class. The commanding officer reports that while the ship was being escorted by five destroyers back to harbour in a damaged condition, he attacked again and struck her with a second torpedo and believes she was sunk. It is probably unnecessary to say that the statement already contradicted and repeated today an official Berlin message that a British destroyer was sunk and a British battleship damaged last Saturday, which is wholly without foundation. New Super Zeppelins. Lord Montague of Bewley, speaking on the air services on Wednesday night, said statements have been made in the House of Commons by Major Baird with reference to a number of Zeppelins that have been brought down. The number, which was 35, was of no real importance. What was important was the number now owned by Germany. In addition to the older type, Germany was now building super Zeppelins, three or four of which would be available about the beginning or middle of October. And following on those news reports from 100 years ago, we have an item here entitled Superstar Actress Enchanted Crowd. Victorian actress Ellen Terry performed at the Grand Theatre in Southampton in 1904. She was the Maggie Smith of her day, and her sole appearance in Southampton brought out the house full signs at the Grand Theatre. Dame Ellen Terry, the leading Shakespearean actress of the Victorian and Edwardian eras, was in town, and how she enchanted the capacity audience, reprising on successive afternoons and nights her much-acclaimed roles of Beatrice in Much Ado About Nothing and Portia in The Merchant of Venice. There was a magnificent house to greet her, and throughout the performance the audience repeatedly signalled their admiration and delight in unmistakable manner, enthused the Southern Daily Echo, reviewing Much Ado About Nothing. She invested the part with her old charm and was splendidly supported by the whole company. She was said to have quite excelled herself with Nance Oldfield, and in The Good Hope, she delivered further proof of her wonderful versatility in the tragically emotional part of a fisherman's widow in a production that was mounted and acted with great fidelity. The other interesting fact of her Southampton sojourn was that she was seen to follow her love of antiques and was noted to have made several purchases at one business. It would have been good to report. She had come to town and other provincial theatres to encourage people to better patronise the stage. Less so, only the previous year she had taken over the management of London's Imperial Theatre, promoting the work of Henry Ibsen and George Bernard Shaw. But the venture was a financial disaster and she was forced to return to acting and lecturing. By now she was in the autumn of her career. Born into an acting family, she began performing as a child, particularly Shakespearean plays, in London. Her breakthrough came by joining Henry Irving's illustrious company and soon became his leading lady, treading the boards not only in Britain but also in America. She continued acting until 1920, and she also appeared in films until 1922. She died in 1928, aged 81. The Grand Theatre in Southampton was demolished in the 1960s for a road widening scheme.
And finally, 200 years ago, on Monday, August the 26th, 1816, passengers enslaved. Every American ship arriving from England or Ireland is full of passengers emigrating to the United States, which circumstance is made great boast of in the American papers. And it is notorious that when an American captain takes over a shipload of passengers from England or Ireland, if he has any demand upon them, real or fictions, he has, on his arrival, the right of selling them for a term of a year. That nothing is more common than this artifice of the captain, of pretending that the wretched people were brought out by him on the condition of devoting their industry for certain periods without reward, and that they are liable to be resold during their servitude in the event of the death. Next item is entitled Sheep Killed by Dogs. One night last week, a valuable flock of Spanish sheep belonging to Mr. Layton of Reedham in Norfolk were grievously injured by dogs. 49 were dreadfully torn and lacerated, and 34 are already dead. The damage done to the remainder is inconceivable, as it is well known by breeders of those timid animals that they never thrive afterwards. The loss is the more to be lamented as it is now impossible to replace them. Mr. Layton imported the breed immediately from Spain, some of them, in the first instance, at 40 guineas per head. And that concludes our weekly regular features, and we're going to move on now and take a look at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. And the first thing that comes to my attention is the Littleton and Hairstock Show, and that's on Saturday, the September the 3rd. It's in the Littleton Recreation Ground. It starts at 1 o'clock, finishes at 5. And there's a flower show. There's the Band of the Royal Artillery, a dog gymkhana, children's races, ferret racing, and other field events, games and stalls, refreshments, and it costs £3 for an adult. A child from the age of 6 to 16 will pay £1. Under 6s are free, and parking is free subject to availability. So that's the Littleton and Hairstock Show. If you want to go to a website, it's www.ihshow, all lowercase, no spaces, ihshow.org.uk. Also, South Wanston have a social club which will be holding a coffee morning on Wednesday, August the 31st. It's Get Down to the Downs Road Club. That's August the 31st to have a natter, a cuppa and a slice of cake. And that's held every Wednesday morning from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Now, Claire has got an item about South Wanston, I think. And she's going to read it to us. Thank you.
The opening of a new pavilion that has been under construction for more than a year will take place next month, and you're invited. The new pavilion on the recreation ground, Lower Road in South Wanston, replaces the old wooden building which residents said needed updating. June Perrins, chairman of South Wanston Parish Council, said, "I'm very pleased to say that building work on the new pavilion is going well, and now we have the pleasant task of organising the opening ceremony. So many local people have worked hard for so long towards these new facilities, it is now wonderful to know that their work will now bear fruit." Ex-Southampton Football Club manager Laurie McMenemy will open the building on September the 18th. Other guests will include Winchester City and Hampshire County councillors, the Mayor of Winchester, Jane Rutter, and members of the Armed Forces Training Centre and Worthy Down Camp. The event starts at 1:30 p.m.
Thank you. Talks and meetings. There's one on Fridays, every Friday. Coffee Morning and a Shop, the Salvation Army in Parchment Street hold those meetings. It starts at 11 a.m. and they have stalls and clothes and refreshments. If you want to know any more about that, it's 01962 854 239. Every Monday from 11:30 and 11:45 to 1:15, there is in the... I'm trying to see where this is held. It's in the United Church in Jury Street. It's a sing-along for well-being. So that's every Monday. Starts at 10 to 11:30 and then 11:45 until 1:15. And that's for people with some memory losses to meet and sing together in a social environment. Partners and carers are invited to attend. And the next meeting is going to be on September the 5th at Winchester Live at Home Scheme. If you want to know more, you can call 01962 890 995. So that's singing for well-being. Sounds lovely. I wouldn't mind doing that myself. On Wednesday, September the 7th, in conversation with Lloyd Grossman at Winchester Guildhall. That's in the Broadway. It starts at 7:30. And Lloyd Grossman, as you might know, is an entrepreneur. He's a historian, writer and broadcaster. And he'll be in conversation with Rose Burns. It'll cost £10 and you can get tickets from Winchester Cathedral box office. Another telephone number for you, 01962 857 275. 857-275. Winchester Cathedral has a lunchtime concert by Claire Rutter, soprano, and Stephen Gaddesden, baritone. It's free, but with a retiring collection, and that is on the 6th of September. Claire Rutter and Stephen Gaddesden, that's a lovely coupling there. Also in Winchester Cathedral, on Wednesday the 7th until Saturday the 10th of September, the Bible will be read non-stop by volunteer readers. They'll be reading from Genesis to the Book of Revelation. You can drop into the cathedral to be part of this event, or I imagine just go and listen. That's the 7th to the 10th of September, Winchester Cathedral. And on the 10th of September again, the Romsey Show at Broadland starts at 8 a.m. and goes on till 6 p.m. Tickets are £15. Carers go in free after showing disability blue badges. And wheelchairs can be hired. And if you want a telephone number, it's 01202 670 450. That's 01202 670 450. The Romsey Show at Broadlands. And that is all we have for you this week, except there's a nice little item in the paper about those zebras that are coming from Southampton to Marwell Zoo.
Yes, on the trail of Marwell's zany zebras, accompanied by a picture of a very brightly coloured stripy zebra being embraced by a little girl. From now until September the 25th, a zeal of Marwell's zany zebras will gallop through Southampton and Marwell Zoo. 150 brightly coloured sculptures will adorn the city streets and the zoo itself, creating two fun, family-friendly trails for all to enjoy. Pick up a trail map in the Marwell's Zany Zebra Zone in the Marlands Shopping Centre, or download the Marwell's Zany Zebras app to find all the sculptures.
Thank you very much. And before we move on to items of the general news, I'm going to give you the lighting up times. Starting on Saturday the 27th, the sun will set at 1 minute past 8 p.m. On Wednesday the 31st of August, the sun will rise at 6:17 a.m. and will set at 7:52 p.m. Those evenings are beginning to draw in, sadly. And now on to items of general news. And Jerry, can we have the first item, please?
Which is headed, MEP slams fracking bribe from government. Plans to give cash incentives to residents in Hampshire villages where fracking could take place have been blasted as bribery by one of the county's MEPs. Keith Taylor, Green MEP for the South East and a member of the European Parliament's Environment Committee, said proposals by Theresa May to give families thousands of pounds were immoral. He said it was astounding that the Prime Minister had put forward this wrong-headed policy, which could see people in Kingsworthy, near Winchester, and other villages across Hampshire receiving cash payouts in advance of energy firms submitting applications to extract shale gas. He added, "The scientific consensus on climate change has never been greater, and we've been told that the best chance of limiting potentially catastrophic temperature increases is by leaving fossil fuels in the ground. Climate change doesn't accept bribes. The UK has enormous renewable energy potential, and we've seen evidence that people across the South East have the passion, willingness and know-how to create clean, people-powered energy in spite of the government's continued onslaught. The British public will not be swayed by a naked attempt at using bribery to divide and conquer communities."
Famous Faces Visit City to Film Series. Faces from the world of TV and cinema have descended on Winchester again to film a new TV series. Scenes for the new BBC comedy Decline and Fall, starring Jack Whitehall and Eva Longoria, are being filmed in the city. Comedian Whitehall was spotted on set on Monday as filming began in and around Winchester College for the series, which also stars David Suchet. However, fans hoping to get a glimpse of Desperate Housewives star Longoria were disappointed as she returned to the United States after filming in Cardiff was completed earlier this month. In Decline and Fall, Whitehall plays Paul Pennyfeather, a student who is expelled from Oxford University and takes a job at an obscure public school in Wales. While there, he is seduced by Margot Best Chetwynd, played by Longoria, the mother of one of his pupils. It will be the first televisual adaptation of Evelyn Waugh's novel, with the three-part series set to air on BBC Two later this year. Scenes for the production are being filmed in College Street, St Lawrence in the Square, and inside Winchester College. The Chronicle arrived at the set before filming began on Monday to see the preparations, including the painting over of double yellow lines, which did not exist in the 1920s. A spokesman for Winchester College said, "It's very exciting, everyone loves it, because it is a little bit different and because Winchester is quiet and private and they had to do it without having hordes of people around. The fee from the filming will help preserve the historic fabric of the school. It is just the latest in a long line of films and television programmes that have been shot in the city. Earlier this year, part of College and Kingsgate streets were transformed into bomb-hit streets for filming of The Crown. Hollywood A-listers Russell Crowe and Hugh Jackman film scenes for the musical Les Miserables, while it has also hosted filming for The Da Vinci Code, Pride and Prejudice, and Children of Men.
And on a familiar theme, Boomtown team cancels event in light of tragedy. Organisers of Boomtown Fair have cancelled a winter event after a teenager died and 80 cars were destroyed in a fire. 18-year-old Olivia Christopher was found in her tent at Matterley Bowl near Winchester on Monday, August the 15th. And earlier, at the 60,000 capacity event, a blaze broke out and 80 cars were gutted. Organisers have now revealed that in the wake of the festival, a future Bath and West show grand event will no longer go ahead. It was intended to be the biggest indoor musical festival in the UK, near Shepton Mallet in Somerset. A Boomtown statement said, "Although there were many amazing things that happened at the festival last weekend, the incidents that did occur, we feel we should take some time to take stock of. As a very close team with so much love for the community that is created at Boomtown, we are absolutely devastated by the news of our festival attendee who tragically passed away. Our thoughts are with the young lady's family, friends and loved ones. We're also currently going through the process to follow up individually with all those affected by the fire and feel that focusing our energy on these events is where it is best placed at this time." The inquest was opened into Olivia's death and adjourned until November the 7th. The 18-year-old from Chesham in Buckinghamshire was found dead in a tent at Boomtown on Monday after the event. Despite attempts to save her by paramedics, she was pronounced dead by the on-site doctor. Although her death is not being treated as suspicious, police investigations were ongoing on behalf of the coroner into the circumstances surrounding her death. As reported in the Chronicle, police officers are continuing to work closely with Boomtown organisers, and witnesses and friends who were at the event are being supported. Her death is the fourth death at the festival in its seven-year history. A newly released aerial image shows the devastation caused by an inferno at a music festival in Hampshire. Ordnance Survey took a photo of the charred remains of cars at the Boomtown Fair. Teams from Nursling-based OS photographed the scene from the air on Monday when they were making surveys. Ordnance Survey Head of Media Robert Andrew said, "Our flying unit are in the skies between February and November each year, surveying and capturing around 50,000 aerial images covering 40,000 kilometres of Great Britain. The team sometimes see unusual and unexpected sights and were working above Southampton and Winchester last Monday and caught the aftermath of the fire at the Boomtown Fair site. You can clearly see the wreckage of the affected cars and fenced-off area of the field."
Fish die as vandals drain tributary of River Test. More than 100 fish have died after vandals caused Romsey streams to run dry. Trout, billheads, minnows, stone loaches and lamprey were left floundering in the stream bed after vandals tampered with Environment Agency equipment. The organisation say someone had altered settings on their special hatch system at Great Bridge Industrial Estate, which controls the flow of water across all of the tributaries of the River Test throughout the town centre. They believe the vandal had allowed more water than necessary to flow into another part of the water system, stripping the stream between the 100 and Middle Bridge Street of any flow. The Environment Agency discovered the system had been tampered with when a member of the public called them at 7:20 a.m. Sunday to let them know the stream had run dry. But before they were able to get the water flowing at its normal level, dozens of fish had lost their lives. Now they are urging people not to tamper with their complex equipment, which helps them maintain the watercourses and protect wildlife across the county. Wesley Jones from the Environment Agency said, "We would like to appeal to the public to speak to the police or call our incident hotline if they know anything about this incident or if they see anyone tampering with any of our equipment. The organisation collected many of the fish, but more than 50 are still at the bottom of the stream. However, the Environment Agency said there was no risk to people or animals and that the remaining carcasses will be eaten by natural predators.
Hotel fundraiser. A Winchester hotel has been helping injured veterans train with vital assistance dogs. The Holiday Inn in Telegraph Way has been working closely with Hounds for Heroes for the last 3 years and sponsoring accommodation for the veterans to carry out the training. Now the hotel will be hosting a special fundraising evening for the charity on October the 6th, which will feature a curry and a quiz to raise funds. Tickets are available at £14.95 per person to include the curry buffet and quiz. Food will be served from 7 p.m. and the quiz will start at 7:45 p.m. To book, call 01962 670700 or email events@hiwinchester.co.uk.
Incident at pub. Police swooped on a Winnell pub after a man was seen swinging a hockey stick. The First In, Last Out pub on Wales Street saw half a dozen officers descend on it just before 5 p.m. on Monday. A police spokesman said, "We were called at 4:46 p.m. to reports of a male outside the property in Wales Street swinging about a hockey stick and chasing away a group of youths. They also had reports that there had been a fight in the pub." He added that no one had been arrested. More than six people were questioned at the scene by police about the fight.
I wonder if he'd been watching the Olympics. Anyway, we are moving on now. Those are the Hampshire Chronicle extracts for the week. Thank you very much, all of you, for reading those. And before we go, another reminder that Irene Dowding is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number again is 01962 870 370. And thanks to all the supporting teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition. And to our editors, Gordon and Liz. And of course, very many thanks to our readers, Claire.
Bye.
Richard.
Goodbye.
Jerry.
Bye.
And from me, Roz. Until the next time, goodbye. Please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible. Have a good week and thank you for listening.